there a doctor in the house?
Doctor, doctor, give me the news. I got a bad case of loving you.
Doctor.
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 And doctor.
It's time for Advanced Medicine Monday with Dr. Rashid Batar.
I'm a doctor, not a bricklayer.
I'm a doctor, not a mechanic.
I'm a doctor, not a coal miner.
The doctor is in.
Dr. Rashid Batar is here, and it's at the start of the show. What is going on, my friend?
It's not that unusual for me to be actually on time, is it?
No, but, you know, we got to razz you for the one time you were late last week, or else Ty Bollinger won't let us speak at the truth about cancer. So he says, you better razz Dr. Batar or else. And I'm like, okay, I'll razz him a little bit.
Consider me having been razzed.
Right. By the way, folks, you can see over my, let's see, that's my left shoulder. If you're watching on YouTube, there's Dr. Batar's book, The 9 Steps to Keep the Doctor Away, international bestseller in many languages, available to you. We're here each and every Monday for Advanced Medicine, second hour of the show, and you can find Dr. Batar, drbuttar.com, drbuttar.com. And yes, I mentioned it, he'll be speaking at the Truth About Cancer Live in Orlando, October 5th, 6th, and 7th. So get tickets while they are available. Also, the Truth About Vaccines is going to be rebroadcasting in a few days, and he's also featured in it. So we do have some vaccine discussion this hour, do we not?
Yeah, I think there's a couple interesting things about that. Robert, do you want to, I mean, how long have you been now going live on YouTube? I know we talked about it before, but how would a person actually find the live stream?
Yeah, this is actually the third, so it's not like it's been a lot of times. It's the third one we've done, so we're still counting on one hand. But if they go to our YouTube channel, it's RS Bell Media channel on YouTube.
It's even easier than that.
Oh, it's easier than that. Super Don's got the tiebreaker.
All they got to do is go to robertscottbell.com, and you'll see it up in the upper right-hand corner right there on the front page. They can just click on the video, and they can watch it right on the website.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Well, that's easy. All right. Well, that's it. Go to robertscottbell.com right now if you haven't already. Tell your friends. You should be instant messaging all of your friends right now. I know who you are. Yeah, go do it. Tell them. Go to the page and watch us. Watch us live.
That's
anyway,
not creepy at all, is it? That's
not
creepy
at all. I know where you live, right? No, of course. They've been watching
Big
us.
Yeah. Watching.
We have lots of fans at the Fear and Death Administration listening for every word, you know, holding on to every word. Oh, what did he say? Oh, Dr. Batar. So we've got lots to do, lots of healing to bring, and including, you know, I think we'll start with this because we've had a lot of listener participation today. And rather than questions, how about let's see how well people are paying attention. People are paying attention with a comment.
Hey, you guys!
Hey, I tell you what.
Hey, here's an idea.
Ow.
Hey, listen up, everybody. Excuse me.
I got something to say.
All right, here's a comment of the day from Mary. Mary says, hello, Dr. Bell and Dr. Batar. During our custody trial at the court, I think this is an ongoing saga, Dr. Batar. She's written to us before. She says, the best interest attorney for the children said that he was so surprised to know that mother, me, that's the mom writing in, wouldn't even allow fluoride, right? Wouldn't even allow fluoride. The judge responded saying dental health is important. But I, the mom, responded that our autistic son has no cavities and fluoride is a neurotoxin. I think this Mary mom is really good here. She says she filed a motion against the tiebreaker position that her husband got, I guess it's a divorce proceeding, and mentioned that blaming a mother for not allowing fluoride is like blaming a mother for not allowing smoking, as the AMA was for smoking many years ago. I also attached an exhibit about the dangers of fluoride, many of these concepts I have learned from your show. Thank you, Mary. So somebody has been paying attention, Dr. Batar.
Yeah, and it's actually really refreshing and empowering for, I'm sure, everybody that heard that she stood up and she made that statement. The analogy is very accurate. And what is today considered to be the standard of care, which is something interesting to hide behind, right? The standard of care, just like smoking or the use of DDT 75 years ago, now it's considered to be very bad. Smoking is bad. Use of DDT is bad. But you remember Liam had those posters that talked about the history. You remember there was one that said he had a little image of a it was a picture from newspaper or a magazine advertisement, mm-hmm. and it showed a child, a baby with the diaper on, and had a smile on the baby's face, and above the baby was a caption that said, flies don't bother me because I've had my DDT.
Yeah, and there was another one, I think, that actually said, DDT is good for me, with the little baby.
Yes.
Right?
Yes, that's another one, right? Yep.
Incredible.
So what was considered to be acceptable is not, you know, later on when the awareness catches up and when the evolution of the mind has taken place and people now understand the newest data and the research, et cetera, what was considered to be the status quo is no longer valid. So what they think was the mainstay and which you know is the Bible and it's the gospel and it's what mm-hmm. everybody should be doing, and if you don't do it then you're an idiot or you're doing something untoward. So this is the evolution of us as mankind, and I think that for a person to stand up, this is what you're doing, this is what I'm doing, this is what many other people are doing, that we're standing mm-hmm. up and talking about, just because this is the status quo now doesn't mean that this is right, and tomorrow that status quo will be disrupted. And now people understanding the dangers of fluoride, 50 years ago, 25 years ago, people didn't talk about it, but that's when Price.
Weston Price, the dentist?
Weston Price, yes.
Yeah.
He started talking about it. And remember how he was attacked. And now, sure. How many years later, still fluoride is considered to be acceptable, but the people that are in the know, there's a lot more people that know. And so that's an evolution that's steadily going on. And I'm very proud of this woman for standing up.
It's great. And again, this should be an example for all you moms and dads out there that you've got to. And it's a tragedy when anybody gets divorced, but you know, sometimes it has to happen. I recognize that. But the idea is, please don't put your kids in the crosshairs like that, where the dad now says, oh, well, I'm going to get her based on her belief is, you know, these are horrible things that happen. But I want you to stand up and defend those kids. Now, it was interesting, like a week and a half ago on Outside the Box, maybe it was last week or 2 weeks ago, I'm not sure, with Ty, we had Rudolph from Curacao. And thanks to the things he learned also from Dr. Paul Connett, who you know, big on the fluoride issue, they went down to Curacao, that little island nation out of the Netherlands north of Venezuela, and they successfully put a court challenge and they got fluoride removed from the water on that entire island. So, you know, we talk about consciousness shifts. I love spotlighting and highlighting that these realities that aren't covered in the mainstream news. I think we were the first broadcast outlet outside of Curacao that trumpeted the news, and of course it was good news. It was great news, in fact, for all of the people that live there and all the people that want a vacation there.
And yet, you know, so many different countries are trying to follow the footsteps of the United States by talking about how it's important to fluoridate the water, and yet the Curacao, having passed this law now, nobody's talking about it. And you would think that even the fact that if they don't agree with it, they would still highlight that, oh, this is interesting, you know, why is this occurring? Why did this one nation have the legal system overturn the standard of using fluoride? But no, they don't even question it. Why don't they question it? Because they're afraid that when people start questioning it, their minds are going to actually kick in, start thinking, and then they're going to become aware of the truth, and that's what they don't want.
Yeah, no radio silence here on these issues. Now, yesterday on the air, this was interesting. I connected through, I think I might have told you, we met a former sheriff, a really cool guy. We go out shooting with him. My son goes out shooting with him at the range and on private property. Really great guy. And he tells me, hey, you know, my former sister-in-law is a gastrointestinal doctor. And I said, a medical doctor? Really? Yeah, you need to talk to her. She's kind of holistic. I'm like, yeah, you know, I've heard that story before. We had her on the air yesterday, and she really has gone holistic. I'm not saying that she's an expert. It's recent for her. In a lot of things, but she confirms a lot of the things we talk about here. I talk about the road to colostomy bags being paved with antibiotics and prednisone, and she was laughing about that, but, you know, that's true. That's what they do and what they know. But, again, it's another doctor. It doesn't happen in mass, but one doctor at a time wakes up and says, you know what, I can no longer poison my patients the same way I was trained to do it. But not everybody then, when they wake up, actually takes the step. And I think that's why there's that, I've talked about the schism in their psyche that causes them to lose sleep at night or have to be on medication just to keep going.
Yeah, and this is one of those phenomena that, if you remember at some of the advanced medicine seminars that we held, Robert, we talked about at the AMSPA conference when we trained the doctors, that there was a statement that I would say on the beginning of the second day, and that was to be careful because we were about to open up a door. And once you open up that door and you see the light, you can never go back into the darkness. And I think this is that evolutionary process you're referring to, that this particular doctor, she has seen the light, And once you've seen the light, there's only two things you can do. You can either proceed, if you have integrity and if you resonate at a higher frequency and you want to advance yourself, your own spirit, your own soul, you walk into that light and you learn the new things. Or you can stick your head in the sand like an ostrich and say, I don't hear it, I don't see it, I don't, you know, just covering your ears up and saying, blah, 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 I don't hear anything. And the people that do that, those are the doctors that end up having health issues, they end up having depression, they end up having, they're just not satisfied people, they're miserable people. And there are a lot of those type of doctors. You walk through a hospital, you can see some of them are very, very happy with what they're doing because they think they're doing the best, and that's great. But there are others that know what they're doing is not right, and they are miserable people. And just imagine, if you were living your life and you were not living your truth, wouldn't you be miserable?
Well, and that is the point. Once you, as you said, you wake up, and I remember that you were really emphatic about that point. Once you go through these doors, you can't ever, you know, as they say, unring the bell. But the idea of the head in the sand, I liken that to basically heavy medication of some kind, whether it be recreational street drugs, which apparently are actually less dangerous than the pharmaceutical variety, or in the pharmaceutical variety, psychiatric meds to keep you going. But again, there is a higher suicide rate in the medical profession. Of course, the dental profession even higher, we know, because of the mercury. But there's an interesting article here, and it's linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. It says, embracing negative emotions could boost psychological well-being. And I'm thinking about this in our discussion here about embracing the discomfort you might feel when you wake up and go, oh, my God, what have I done? Because you can drug that away, but really you're suppressing it, you're eliminating it temporarily, but it's going to come back. And that, of course, could manifest as cancer later in your life.
Yeah, I think that's a very true statement, because the emotional aspect is that the fifth toxicity, what we talk about in the book, that fifth toxicity is the, in my opinion at least, the single most important cause of all disease, and specifically in cancer, that's where I kind of discovered it. But this is a very, very important point, and I think we need to talk about this. I think we're coming on a break, but I think this is something that we need to further discuss.
All right, let's do it. Embracing or avoiding negative feelings. I know if you're holistically inclined, you'll go, oh, I'm with you, but let's talk about why it's important and why holding on, or let's say suppressing a negative emotion, could manifest as cancer later in life, as we talk about the emotional toxicities in the 9 steps to keep the doctor away by Dr. Rasha Bitar. Check it out. We'll be right back.
Who'd you say that masked man was?
It's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Robert Scott Bell.
Here I come to save the day.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
2 hours a day, 6 days a week. What is unique about what we do on our Advanced Medicine Monday editions with Dr. Rasha Bitar is that there's also a specialized archive that he's been putting in place for years. We've been doing this, I think we're in our 7th year together on the air. And so there are hundreds and hundreds. Eighth year now? I think you're right. And there's a place that you can go if you want to like hone in, because Lord knows you get enough of me. But you can never get enough of Dr. Bitar. So you go right to medicalrewind.com, and it's all there, except for the first segment, last hour, where there was no Bitar anywhere in sight.
Yeah.
But it still worked out. It worked out.
You had to rub that in. I appreciate that.
Listen, we have enough shows together now where I think we can rag on each other just a little bit. So anyway, we have a good time. So emotional toxicity, again, this brings up some interesting things, this article about embracing negative emotions. And it's like, you know, some people get into the new age concepts, oh, you should never have a negative emotion. Oh, you're not being spiritual. I'm like, screw that. I'm human. You know, if I'm going to be feel angry, I want to you know, let it be, let it out, right? And then you move on rather than bottle it up and it eats you alive like cancer.
Well, that's exactly the point, Robert. But the question is, what did they mean by embracing the emotion? Because there's two sides to this. It's like a double-edged sword. So where tension goes, energy flows. So if you harbor on negative thoughts, a negative emotion, like, you know, you listen to the news and you hear about all the death and this and that, and if you're constantly doing it in a way that's disempowering, that's not good. But to also stick your head in the sand and then not deal with certain things. That's also not good. On the opposite spectrum, to be positive, having a positive mental attitude, that's a great thing. But positive mental attitudes are kind of like driving down the road and seeing your car's on empty, almost on empty, and you're having a positive mental attitude. I'm not going to run out of gas. I'm not going to run out of gas. I'm not going to run out of gas. You're going to run out of gas. You know, the point is that, again, you need to do something productive and constructive towards and take specific action towards whatever that positive thought process is. If you say, I'm not going to run out of gas, then you have to start looking for the closest gas station. So having a positive mental attitude is very important from that standpoint, and having your thoughts going towards positive things. But at the same time, repressing negative emotion, as you said, if not allowed out, will become an abscess. It will fester, it will rot away, and it will cause what we now know as cancer, and other types of things too. But cancer is a perfect example, and it's the combination of stagnation and lack of flow of energy and retention of negative emotions.
Well, one of my friends, Purple V, she's called, Vaishali, she talked about digesting your emotions, right? If you can't digest your emotions, right, it's not about ignoring them, suppressing them, but it's like if you don't digest them, then, yeah, you've got this kind of emotional indigestion that can fester, and then you end up taking a drug for it. And it can manifest physically as an acute response initially, but as you continue to drug the acute manifestation, it becomes chronic and on and on. And then, of course, the ultimate chronic disease manifestation could be considered cancer. And then what, right? And the things you write about, why is it the fifth toxicity? Why is it such a critical aspect of when we talk about detoxification, we're not just talking about getting the mercury and lead out, although we're not ignoring that. It's critically important. But my goodness, you can do all of those good things and fester on a wound that is an emotional wound and still not achieve the ultimate goal.
That's exactly right, Robert. And I think that for people to understand and recognize that when they need to cry, it's okay to cry. It's okay to be sad. It's okay to let those things out. Because by letting those things out, it's almost like the exhaust system of a car. If you remember Eddie Murphy's movie, Beverly Hills Cop, remember he sticks the bananas in the exhaust pipe.
I'm not going to fall for no more banana in the tailpipe. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. But that's exactly what's happening when you suppress an emotion. You're clogging everything up, and it causes a backlog, and the system can't function properly. So it's okay to feel those emotions. What's not okay is to fester on them and harbor on them and let them encompass you and control you. That's not okay.
And
absolutely.
Dr. Bitar, one of the ways that I found to digest emotions appropriately is sometimes you got to dissipate them through physical exercise. Am I wrong there, or is that something I've felt?
That's exactly how I have done it. I mean, especially anger. Mm-hmm. For me, frustration, anger, feeling that injustice has been done, working out is one of the best things for me, and it actually gives me a great workout. I remember when I went through my divorce in 2000, it was very antagonistic, as sometimes it can be. Mm-hmm. And ideally, you know, you don't want to be in that type of situation. But I hate running. I mean, I used to go run a couple of miles, 4 or 5 miles. And I remember my attorney saying something to me after one meeting and said that, you know, you were remarkably calm while all these explosions were going on. And I said, I was just happy I wasn't running anymore.
Yeah, exercise until you're just so happy that the maybe we can get into the emotional part of it again. I don't know. Anyway, folks, we got a lot more broadcast healing to go. It's Advanced Medicine with Dr. Bitar. You can go to medicalrewind.com. Lots of things linked in the show notes. Check them out. We're going to talk about epilepsy, what might be causing it, and how do we undo it after this break. Stick with us.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In all my years of radio, I've never seen anything like this.
The Robert Scott Bell Show. Taking on bureaucrats and corporations that would stand in the way of health freedom. Here's Robert.
All right, back at it. We had to, cut your little thing short on the emotion and the physicality of exercise, and it was a great story. But up against the break, we had to run. So, speaking of running, you were doing that, and you didn't like it. And you're like, well, it's helping me deal with the emotional stress of a seriously difficult circumstance. So what else can we have as far as perspective of how to do that as well?
Well, if you know that you're going to come into a potentially volatile situation, or you're going to be dealing with something where there's going to be a lot of emotional uprising, it's maybe a good idea to preemptively strike by exercising, and that's what I was doing basically. I knew that this would be a volatile situation, so I went and ran 5-6 miles. I was exhausted. And when the explosion took place, I was very flat. My affect was very flat, and that's why my attorney was very proud of me, and he didn't realize. And I told him, I said, look, I'm exhausted, and I was totally worn out, so I had nothing in me, and I was just happy that I wasn't running anymore. So he actually thought that was a great exercise to he put away, fathered in his mental memory. He said that that's a great thing for me to remember to exercise before I go into a difficult situation. And I think this is what many people that are dealing with mentally exertive type things. In surgery, for example, when I was doing surgery, one of my attendings, before a long vascular case, he would go and work out, and then he'd go, in some of these cases, would last 10, 12 hours. I've seen this from my own perspective, taking exams while in med school and even college. Whenever I'm working on something long and I've been sitting at a desk, just taking a break and doing some push-ups or doing something to break that monotony, it helps to stimulate a different cascade. And actually, if you can get the endorphins going, that's more like an endurance type thing. If you can do that, it can become almost euphoric. But the point is that it preemptively prevents that explosiveness and that anger and that and any other emotions that you may have, and you don't have to deal with that anymore. It helps to mitigate everything.
Well, again, these are strategies that are simple yet overlooked in the world that wants to, as far as allopathic monopolies, drug you into relaxation. I talked to somebody earlier, you know, that they put on Xanax, right? This woman, she's dealing with stress from an ailment that's not she's not recovering, and she's anxious about it, right? She's nervous about it. She's not really suffering from anxiety other than the anxiety induced by the other ailments, and they can't figure out what to do. So they say, hey, here, take this. And I'm thinking, you know, try CBD. At least it's not going to, you know, really harm you. So these are very important points to make here as far as strategic steps you can take, knowing that, you know, without stress, there is no life. And I'm not saying that all stress is negative stress either. I think there's a lot of positive stress, including, like you said, exercise. But the idea is, how do we deal with this in a way that it strengthens us as opposed to weakens us?
Well, Robert, there's another thing here that I think is going to be very interesting to point out, which I just recently became aware of after reading some works by a psychologist that I've been following for some time. And it's actually the relationship between some of these drugs that you're talking about and the media. So basically, it seems to be that the media and the government know that the consumption of products, whether it be video games, alcohol, makeup, food substances, they actually increase. There's a direct correlation that there's an increase in consumable product purchase when people are at either depressed or sad or a little bit uneasy. When people are content and satisfied, the usage or the consumption of substances that are considered to be elective consumptions, not something that you need like, you know, food necessarily, but just other things, consumption of these products decreases. So there is actually, the media promotes bad news because they know that, one, they make their money from advertising dollars, and two, there's more consumption of product if some people are upset or if they're saddened.
Dude, this explains what's going on with the Charlottesville, the race wars and everything. I mean, they're looking to sell so much Xanax at this point. There's no question about
it. It's not just drugs. It's all sorts of consumer products. So when the media says, hey, we only report the news, this is a point that was made. We only report the news. Well, that's true. They may report the news, but they choose. The statement is, we only report the news. We don't choose the news. But the thing is, they choose to report what they want to report because there are more good things happening on the planet than there are bad things. So why don't they talk about the good things? Well, they don't, because bad news travels faster. And also, if you start looking at the motivation, their motivation is to, one, increase their sales of the products for the companies that they're advertising for, and two, because there's more consumable products. So the media's information that they're putting out, the negative information, travels faster. So if they say that this is what society wants, you know, what does society want? We don't watch the news. I don't watch the news. The news that I get is either from you, and every now and then I'll look on the internet just to kind of see what's going on with the political situation. And that's only because I look for it just to kind of see. I'm curious. But otherwise, 99% of the news I don't look at. Why? Because in my world, I don't want that negative energy to be bearing down on me. And this is one of the problems, chronic depression. One out of every two Americans today will be prescribed some type of an anxiolytic or antidepressant. That is sad. More than 50% of Americans will have at some point been on an antidepressant or an anxiolytic.
Well, and this is the reason when I say to people, if you want to watch the news, and a lot of people are sort of addicted to it, that please do it in a prayerful way. I know it's strange to hear, but, you know, do a prayer, sing a song, chant a word, something that keeps you above that negative vibe that's kind of trying to trap you in negativity, in an emotional state where you're victimized by it, and you don't intend to be necessarily, but it kind of happens before you realize it. And so it's very important to be a conscious consumer, for instance, of the news, as opposed to one that's just victimized by it and you didn't know any better.
And I think it's so easy to become victimized by it because we don't even realize it's happening. It just permeates your energy, your field, because you're constantly being bombarded by it. So we have to protect ourselves from the information that's coming into our heads, just like we have to be very protective of the words that come out of our mouths.
Yeah, well, I'm usually that way, right, Super Don? But last hour we did a story from the New York Times on hot sex and socialism, which was kind of a weird story, but it happens sometimes.
Well, and, you know, the word, the use of the word, you have to be very careful how you use words, because if you don't judiciously choose your words correctly, it can have a very negative impact, especially like with children. There's a book, it's a very evangelical book, but it's called Hung by the Tongue. And it's basically talking about the usage of correct words. Instead of telling a child no or don't, redirect the child. Why don't you do it this way? Or why don't we do something else rather than telling the child no? Because then the child hears no, 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 no all the time, or don't. That's a negative thing. So if we can put the message forward in a positive way, that's more important, because it'll resonate with the individual, and it's not inhibitory. It's opening up the path. Just think about the pharmaceutical drugs, right? They're inhibiting pathways. We want to enhance pathways. Same thing with the words. Just use the words that are going to be powerful and enhancing as opposed to inhibitory.
Right. I do remember as a lifeguard years ago in my teen years, right? And you'd have little kids that would run and horseplay. And, you know, the command was by people unconscious. They'd say, don't run. And all the kids will hear is run. They don't hear the don't.
Right. Right,
and so the command needed to be walk, and they got and they're like, oh.
Or slow down. They slow down. I didn't know you were a lifeguard, but I was too. So
yeah,
slow down.
No. And so you learn about these things. And, of course, unfortunately, many people are unconscious like children in regards to taking orders this way with the news, and they hear these things. They don't know it's permeating into their subconscious, and it's impacting them. And then that depression and everything else that goes to create disease in their life happens. Listen, here's the question. What causes all the epilepsy? There's a huge surge across the United States now. 3.4 million Americans, apparently. That might be understated. Could it be neurochemical pollution? Now, epilepsy is something that, you know, some people think, oh, it's only about head injury. I've seen in my practice over the years, Dr. Bitar, that it's gastrointestinal sourced as well as heavy metal neurological, you know, impact as well. It can be simultaneous, right, with the vaccines and the mercury. But they're actually bringing this up now in the media, apparently, neurochemical toxins.
Well, I'm surprised that more people aren't having seizure disorders and epilepsy, because there's so many things that are being used in commerce that are known to be neurotoxic substances. I mean, you look at aspartame and sucralose, some of these sweeteners, you know, they're all been shown to have neurological implications. You look at thimerosal, by Eli Lilly's own admission in their material safety data sheet for thimerosal back in 1991, which if anybody wants a copy of it, I'll be happy to provide it for them. It says that thimerosal is a known neurotoxic substance known to cause severe neurological deficits, including but not limited to mental retardation. So now you start looking at these types of things, and this is 1991. We're talking, 26 years ago, it was being utilized in openly, and now it's still being utilized, but it's being done a little bit quieter. I'm surprised more people aren't having seizure disorder.
You're right.
And
you mentioned artificial sweeteners. We have an article here that says it's increased 200% its use among children. 200%. And, you know, from 99 to 2012, and they acknowledge the scientific community doesn't even know what that means, right? We talk about the breakdown components of aspartame, and we think, methanol, what? Wait, that's neurotoxic. Formaldehyde, that's not good. That's embalming fluid. And DKP, which is an unknown brain tumor-forming agent, and formic acid, which is the chemical equivalent of ant sting poison. All of these things have a negative neurological impact. and of course the impact in the GI, which is now all connected and related, as we understand. So you're right. It's amazing that more people don't have it, although they have these kinds that you can barely detect abnormal electrical activity as well. So that could be playing a role. Now, I think this was one of the biggest things in the last few years. The only good thing I could say on CNN that happened was when Sanjay Gupta, the brain surgeon, did his thing on weed, and he talked about CBD, or his Charlotte's Web version, and it was reversing seizures in children, because he was negative on that plant, and suddenly he starts seeing these kids given this oil from this plant, and it reversed these seizures almost instantaneously. So it's not like we don't have remedies, but we don't also want to overstate it and say that's all you need to do, because what about those neurotoxic chemicals that are still in the body?
Yeah, you know, the use of these neurochemicals, it's so rampant, and it became pretty big maybe 10, 15 years ago. People started talking about it, so you don't see some of these synthetic sweeteners now in the restaurants necessarily that are sitting around, although you still see them. But now in the healthy drink arena, right, you've got all these healthy fruit juices and this and that, and then you look at what they're sweetened with, and they're sweetened with sucralose, which is a chlorinated sugar molecule. So even permeating into the health and wellness arena, these synthetic sweeteners that are causing neuroexcitatory responses are rampant. And so we have to be very, very aware that there is a use of this in different types of arenas, and people thinking that they're doing something healthy and consuming some of these things without even realizing it. So it is rampant. It is rampant.
Yeah,
I'm surprised not double the amount of people are having seizures.
Read labels, or better yet, grow a little bit more of your own food and drink more water. For goodness sake, drink more water. Stop it. Kids don't have to have synthetically sweetened, sugary, syrupy. It wasn't good for me. Let's just say that. I'll just say that. You guys figure it out. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Robert Scott Bell Show. The Robert Scott Bell Show. Bell Show. The information is so good, it requires no expiration date. The Robert Scott Bell Show.
In the show notes, again, we got a picture of me and Dr. Bitar together when we were, I think, at the Truth About Cancer event with Ty Bollinger. And you can click on that. It'll take you to medicalrewind.com for archives if you want to go right back to hundreds of hours that you've missed. Also, there's a picture of the book, The Nine Steps to Keep the Doctor Away. For those of you who are new listeners, you don't know how to get that, I'll link right there. You can go get it, learn about it. There's a lot of awesome stuff. And we've got a few minutes left here, Dr. Bitar. One of the things that we haven't covered is about a new study claiming that vaccine makers and FDA regulators have used statistical gimmicks to hide risks of HPV vaccines. Now, they've never done that. They would never do that. They've never done that with any other vaccine. Why would they start now?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it may be a political gimmick. They may be trying to do some damage control, you know. I don't know. I have no idea what their motivation could be.
I mean, the thing is, the fact that they call the HPV vaccine a cancer vaccine, right from the get-go, it's a bald-faced lie. It's never been approved as a cancer vaccine. It's a four strains of HPV vaccine, supposedly to prevent genital warts or something along those lines, and they keep expanding what they want it to be. Never proven that it is that. And in fact, I've said 20, 30 years from now, when these women develop cervical cancer, if not 10 or 15 or 5 because of the vaccine itself, they can then go, well, plausible deniability. We thought it would work 25 years ago, but now we've got something better. And then they revaccinate them. So, again, it's a big scam, and it's causing infertility. It's causing Guillain-Barré, debilitating neurological issues, and even death among teenage girls.
And so maybe they should look at that and see how many people have died from this vaccine, how many have had permanent neurological damage. And I've had a number of patients have come to us with sequela from this type of injury. And then look at how many people have actually not had cancer after having this vaccine, which I'm pretty sure that you can't assess how many people have not had cancer, because how are you gonna prove that in a study that this many people? I guess you could take a control group and say, in society, this is a normal average number of people that develop this type of cancer, and these people, this patient population, had this vaccination, and their incidence of cancer was less or more. And you and I both know that it would be a higher incidence of cancer in those people, and yet they would be that population would also have a higher incidence of concomitant death, as well as neurological implications, et cetera, et cetera. So you're right. This is propaganda to its max. And, you know, there is that remote possibility, Robert, though, that they actually fell, hit their head, and actually realized that they are making a mistake and maybe trying to do something right. I don't know.
I don't know what's happening here, except that they are scamming the population, and they have a perfect plausible deniability to make billions of dollars for 20, 25, maybe 30 years before the piper is paid and everybody realizes they were scammed. But at that point, it's just like Big Pharma's standard operating procedure. We bring a drug out. We know it can be deadly. We get it out there for a number of years, make $20 billion. The government catches us, even though they were complicit, and then we pay a few hundred million in fines, and they build that into the price of doing business, and they make out like bandits.
Yeah, and this is modus operandi. This is normal, everyday process. This is part and parcel of how the, you know, if you were going to flow chart this out of taking a new drug to market, this is part of it, you know. As you said, they've already factored in the $500 million in fines that they'll have to pay after it's taken off the market. But in the greater scheme of things, after the $25 billion that they've made, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, so if you read this article, and it's up there on the Natural Blaze, we have it linked up in the show notes at robertscottbell.com. They talk about the way they've manipulated the studies, the data, et cetera, so that it could be approved for use. They abbreviated the trial times. There were other they can delete data. The way they present the data, I mean, this is the corruption of science that we've been talking about for many years. It isn't science itself that's good or bad. It's just whether it's done right, whether it's done with an economic agenda. And in that case, you throw out all the issue of real placebo controls, like we've talked about aluminum-based adjuvants as the placebo, which is not a true placebo, against the actual vaccine, which also has the aluminum-based adjuvant. So, again, lots of scams going on, nothing new, but we're going to spotlight them here on the show.
Yeah, so is it when they say vaccine makers and FDA regulators use statistical gimmicks to hide risk on HPV vaccines, are they, I had misread this because I thought that vaccine makers and FDA regulators had found that there had been use of statistical gimmicks to hide risks of HPV vaccine. Because I just reread it, and I thought that's what we were saying, that they were actually becoming aware of the mistakes that they had made themselves.
Nope.
I said that. I think maybe it's probably.
They are busted. I would have played the busted theme song, but we don't have time, and we're out of time. In fact, you know, we've just got to tell them what they need to know before we got to go, and that's now.
The power to heal is unequivocally yours.
Yes, it is. Thank you, my friends.
The Robert Scott Bell Show.